Mirror, a Good Omens fan fiction written by Improbable Dreams 900, read by God of Laundry Baskets. Chapter 7, The Killer Instinct. As Crowley laid his hands on the carved bars of Lucifer's cage, he thought to himself that this might be the most reckless and possibly the last thing he would ever do. Even weakened as Lucifer was, it was still painfully obvious that he possessed more power than Crowley could dream of, and once Crowley opened the cage, Lucifer would have plenty of opportunity to use it. A few meters behind Crowley, hovering above where the flames licked upwards from the sea of lava, sat a perfectly circular white portal. Crowley had conjured it a moment before, following Lucifer's rasped instructions and praying that the caged seraph wasn't feeding him the directions to a spell that would end in his own painful death. But the portal had appeared, just as Lucifer had said it would, a flat white circle identical to the one Crowley had seen appear in his lounge just a few days ago. Lucifer's half of the bargain thusly fulfilled, it was now time for Crowley to hold up his end. It was very tempting to just dive through the portal and leave Lucifer to rot in his terrible cage, but Crowley didn't think he was willing to cross the devil at his own game. Besides, holding up his end of the bargain meant that, after he freed Lucifer, the Seraph might uphold his, which could lead to a withdrawal from Earth, and thus the allowance of some time for the balance to be restored to this universe. So Crowley had fallen into an awkward hover and moved closer to the cage, wing strokes buffeting the pool of lava beneath him. According to Lucifer, Crowley had bound the glyphs on the cage to his own aura, so that he was the only one who could open it.
Just tell it to open, Lucifer rasped from his cage,
where he'd drawn back slightly from the bars.
If you are really him, it should open.
Don't try anything, Crowley warned, feeling a bead of sweat roll down the back of his neck as he adjusted his grip on the engraved bars, the edges of the glyphs sharp against his fingers. He turned his attention to the bars.
Open!
Crowley pulled his hands back and simultaneously brought his wings down hard, propelling himself away from the cage, and backwards toward the portal. At the same instant, all around the perimeter of the cage, the bars cracked. A horizontal fissure appeared in the center of each bar, breaking them into upper and lower halves. The fissure widened, the top half of the bars receding upwards and vanishing into the solid top panel of the cage, while the bottom half did the same with the floor. Despite the fact that the top and bottom halves of the cage were no longer physically attached, the cage remained steady as the bars slowly pulled away, melting seamlessly into top and bottom panels. Lucifer moved forwards and began slowly pulling himself from the cage, straightening up properly for what must have been the first time in forever, three sets of tattered wings spreading out behind him.
"Bye," Crowley said shortly and threw himself through the portal before Lucifer decided it was easier to just kill him.
The world flashed bright white around Crowley, and a heartbeat later, he rocketed out into the cold darkness of a cool spring night. Crowley pulled back immediately, wings flaring out behind him, and hovered for a moment as he let his eyes adjust. He made out something flat and gray beneath him, and half-folded his wings as he stepped down onto it. The ground flexed beneath him as he landed, a hollow ringing noise emanating from under his feet, and Crowley realized in surprise that he was standing on corrugated sheet metal. He looked around at his surroundings, placing himself on what appeared to be a roof, four short towers rising around him in a square.
Beyond the nearest one, he could see the glimmer of city lights and the outline of what he thought was the Dome of St. Paul's. He spotted Crawley almost immediately, kneeling on the roof not far away. His back was to Crawley, but he'd twisted so that he was looking over his shoulder, and he knew Crawley had seen the light cast by the portal. "Nice night," Crawley commented, folding his wings neatly behind him. He felt his mobile buzz in his pocket, but ignored it, keeping his eyes on his double. Crawley climbed to his feet, the light of the portal gleaming off the divine sword in his hand. "I didn't expect to be seeing you again."
"I don't imagine you did, no," Crawley said easily, not moving from his place in front of the portal.
It wouldn't be long now before it began to shrink and then vanished. He wasn't about to give Crawley the opportunity to escape, as Crawley had before.
"Your world's a bit of a dump, you know that?"
Crawley's face twisted itself into an annoyed expression.
"At least it's not mass chaos like yours."
"It's not chaos," Crawley said mildly. "It's highly organized, but you do have to look at it quite closely, I'll give you that." Crawley paced closer, feet ringing on the sheet metal.
"How did you open that?"
he asked, raising the sword and pointing it at the portal behind Crawley.
"Oh, this?"
Crawley asked, making a show of looking over his shoulder at the portal, which was beginning to dwindle in size.
"I paid a visit to an old friend of yours. I believe he's the erstwhile King of Hell, and he gave me a few pointers."
Crawley's expression soured, a hard glint coming into his eyes.
"You spoke to Lucifer?"
"More than spoke," Crawley said cheerfully, savoring the look of irritation on his double's face.
"That's quite a lock you have on his cage, keyed only to open to your aura.
Or should I say, it was a good lock."
"You..."
Crawley surged forward but caught himself a moment later. The sword in his hand abruptly burst into flames.
"I underestimated you," he said.
Crawley shrugged, watching the light cast by the portal begin to fade further, his shadow on the corrugated roof growing fainter. The portal must have almost closed by now.
"You're not the first."
"Though it is no matter," Crawley hissed, stalking closer.
"I was going to have to release Lucifer for the final battle anyway."
"Then no hard feelings?" Crawley's lip curled.
"I'm afraid not. Your presence annoys me."
"Same." Crawley lunged forward with the sword. At the same moment, Crawley flung his wings out and pushed them forward as hard as he could. The gust of wind slammed into Crawley, sending the flames of his sword flaring higher as Crawley shot backwards and into the air, the last vestiges of the portal winking out beneath him. He spun in midair, sweeping his wings down as he shot towards the edge of the roof. Once he cleared what looked like a row of crenellations, Crawley cranked in his wings, twisted, and dove straight down and out of sight of the roof. Crawley flashed by several stories of pale stone walls and windows and suddenly recognized where he was, the White Tower, in the Tower of London. The ground neared very quickly, and Crawley barely snapped his wings open in time. He still hit hard, collapsing into a crouch to absorb the force as all the air was driven from his lungs. Crawley forced himself immediately to his feet, chest burning, and staggered backwards until he ducked into a nearby doorway. Now, safely out of view of anyone standing on the edge of the roof and looking down, Crawley took a moment to catch his breath. He stayed there for a long minute, heart pounding in his chest, but there were no signs of pursuit. Maybe Crawley had decided he wasn't worth killing after all. He'd clearly been in the middle of something on the roof. Crawley took a deep breath and decided to give it another few minutes, so Crawley would be more inclined to think Crawley had fled. Given how Crawley had acted at their first meeting, he thought it likely that Crawley would underestimate him again. Crawley kept his back against the heavy wooden door, eyes on the pattern of faint light and shadow playing across the ground in front of him, but there was no sign of movement. A few trees sighed in the wind nearby. Remembering that his mobile had buzzed earlier, Crawley fished around in his pocket for it. He must have come back into range when he'd passed through the portal, because his mobile was showing 3 missed calls, 2 of which had voicemails. They were all from Aziraphale. Crawley glanced out at the darkened night again, but there was still no sign of Crawley, so he navigated to his first voicemail and put the phone to his ear. "Lee, am I supposed to talk now?" "Listen, Crawley, where are you? You know I dislike it when you are not punctual. It is unprofessional and a waste of my time." There was a hint of annoyance in Aziraphale's voice. "St. James," Crawley remembered belatedly. "I was supposed to meet him there on Thursday." Crawley bit his lip and clicked on the second voicemail message. "Really? Are you okay? It's unlike you to disappear like this. Please, get in touch." This time, it was concern plain in Aziraphale's voice, and Crawley leaned his head back heavily against the door. "I apologize if I have offended you, though, frankly, I can't think of any reason why that would be the case." The message clicked off, and Crawley lowered the mobile from his ear, frowning worriedly down at the list of messages. The first was from 3 days ago, the following 2 from yesterday. There had been nothing in the last 24 hours. Casting another look out at the still night, Crawley hit the return call button and put his mobile to his ear. He kept his eyes trained on the ground in front of him as the phone rang. It rang twice more, and Crawley hung up midway through the 4th ring. He stared down at his mobile worriedly. Given that Aziraphale wasn't likely to try contacting him 3 times in 2 days, and then abruptly give up without having found him, Crawley decided that this did not bode well at all. He remembered Crawley on the roof, with his devious, malicious nature and nearly identical appearance. Crawley ground his teeth together and tucked his mobile back into his pocket. He took another deep, bracing breath and stepped out from under the cover of the recessed doorway. Keeping an eye on the stars, Crawley very quietly spread his wings and took to the air. He flew around the corner of the keep, slowly gaining altitude on silent wings. He reached the top level of the tower and hovered there for a moment, just high enough to peek over the edge of the battlements. Crawley was kneeling on the metal sheeting again, his back to Crawley, and it looked like he was drawing something. Crawley's eyes fixed themselves on the divine sword, resting next to his double on the corrugated roof. Crawley pushed himself higher, keeping his wings as perfectly aligned with the air currents as he could, hoping Crawley would mistake the quiet sounds of his feathers cutting through the air for the rustle of the breeze through the trees below them. Once he'd risen above the crenellations, he began gliding silently forward, catching an opportune breeze and flying low over the roof of the tower. He was approaching Crawley from behind, and Crawley extended his hand as he drew quickly near, intending on simply plucking the divine blade from its place beside his double. Crowley's hand closed around the hilt, and a heartbeat later he crashed headlong into the metal sheeting as Crawley grabbed his wrist and yanked him out of the air. Crawley twisted, head ringing slightly as he redoubled his grip on the hilt of the sword and tried to roll away. One of his wings was half collapsed under his shoulder, but he struck out with the other one, slamming the leading edge hard into Crawley's face. His double hissed, but merely turned his head aside and surged forward, digging his knee into Crowley's stomach as he tried to pry the sword from his grip. Crowley writhed, trying to shake Crawley off him, and the second slam of his wing into Crawley's face slid his doppelganger mostly off his chest. Crowley tried to scramble to his feet, tightening his grip on the sword, but Crawley grabbed the edge of his suit jacket and yanked him back down to the roof, crushing one of Crowley's wings in the process. They wrestled on the metal sheeting for possession of the sword for a long moment, both of them elbowing, kneeing, and scratching wherever they could. They rolled over, and Crawley slammed the back of Crowley's head into the sheeting as he gained the upper hand, still trying to pry the sword from Crowley's vice-like grip. "I'm going to kill you," Crawley hissed. "I'm going to decorate this entire blasted city with your organs." Crowley didn't reply, instead dragging the sword closer to them so that the blade passed dangerously close to his double's face. Crawley pulled back to avoid it, and Crowley surged upwards, turning them over again. Crowley saw his opportunity and scrambled to his feet, shoving Crawley back down with a foot on his sternum when he tried to follow, finally yanking the sword free from his double's interfering grip. He fanned his wings open and swept them forward, propelling himself backwards a few meters. He touched down straight away and took a few short steps back towards Crawley, close enough to be threatening, but out of easy reach. Crawley was already halfway to his feet, but Crowley leveled the divine sword at his chest and he slowed to a stop. "What did you do to Aziraphale?" Crowley demanded, the sword heavy and unfamiliar in his hand. For a moment, Crawley just blinked at him with serpentine eyes, then he huffed a laugh and sat back heavily, the metal roofing thrumming hollowly under him. "You're joking," he wheezed. "You actually do know that, Angel? This is even better than stringing your organs across London." Something icy crept across Crowley's insides, and he took a half step forward, moving the tip of the sword so it was pointed at his double's throat. "Tell me what you did to him," Crowley repeated loudly. Crawley grinned, and the cruel expression looked wrong on his face. "Oh, but it's more than you just knowing him, isn't it? You care for him. How precious." "Answer my question," Crowley snapped. "But you've got to appreciate the irony," Crawley crowed. "Just look at that sword in your hand. Do you have any idea where I got it?" "I don't care," Crowley said shortly, taking another half step forward, the tip of the sword now only a foot away from Crawley's throat. "Just tell me what you did with him." Crawley leaned forward, looking up at Crowley with cold, serpentine eyes, as he pushed his own throat closer to the tip of the divine blade. "I pulled that sword from the body of your little friend right after I killed him with it." Crowley felt cold and numb all over, and it took him a breathless moment to realize that Crawley wasn't talking about his Aziraphale. Crawley had brought the sword with him when he'd passed through the portal into Crowley's lounge, so surely it didn't make any sense if he killed Aziraphale before that. "Your Aziraphale, you mean?" Crowley said, feeling rattled and desperate for confirmation. "His Aziraphale couldn't be dead. He couldn't." "Oh, yes," Crawley said easily, settling back further onto the roof and looking quite at home. what I did to your sorry excuse for an angel is so much worse. Pity I didn't think of it sooner. It was such fun. Tell me, Crowley demanded, the tip of the sword trembling. Now! Crowley smirked. Sure. He sat forward again, and Crowley adjusted his grip nervously on the hilt of the sword, unnerved by the calmness in his double's eyes. The last I saw him, he was calling your name from his cozy new home in hell. You should have heard him. He was so desperate. The icy feeling wrapped itself tighter around his chest, and Crowley felt himself begin to properly panic, breath shortening. Where in hell? He demanded, trying to steady his shaking hands. His mind was on the horrible cage he'd just left, and the ravaged state of Lucifer's wings and corporation. The corner of Crowley's mouth turned up. Let's just say, I threw him to the dogs. Crowley felt himself blanch, but stepped forward anyway, pushing the tip of the sword closer to his double's throat. You're going to regret that. Crowley willed the sword to burst into flames. A long moment passed, but nothing happened. Crowley's eyes flicked to the blade, and he willed harder, hand growing tighter around the sweat-slicked hilt. The sword trembled a little in his grip, but the steel stayed cool. Crowley was staring at the blade, too, and then he threw his head back and laughed. Crowley scowled and shook the sword. He was going to kill Crowley with it! He wanted to kill Crowley with it! He was distraught and upset, fear and anger coursing through him, but the sword wouldn't light. His mind jumped back to Aziraphale, most likely hurt or trapped in hell, and he didn't want to delay here any longer than absolutely necessary. Come on! Crowley sat forward, expression gleeful. You can't light it? He can't do it. You're a coward and a pacifist. I'm not a pacifist, Crowley growled, shaking the blade again. I'm a demon. It wasn't like he hadn't taken lives. And if Crowley could light it, then Crowley knew he had to have it in him somewhere. Crowley was still laughing, and Crowley took a step backwards, feeling a second wave of panic begin to set in. He needed to find Aziraphale as soon as possible, but he didn't want to leave Crowley on the board any longer than he had to either. He was dangerous, and the fact that he was up here on this rooftop in the middle of the night proved he was up to something. So Crowley stopped trying to light the sword, and instead glared at his double, who was slowly making his way to his feet and barely containing his amusement. Then, Crowley turned and sprinted for the edge of the rooftop. Oi! Crowley shouted after him, the humor suddenly vanishing from his voice. Crowley reached the edge of the roof, put one foot on a crenel, and threw himself off the edge. He snapped his wings out, shoulders straining as he shot westward at top speed, the divine blade heavy in his hand. Crowley could hear Crowley snarling expletives not far behind him, and he commanded his wings to carry him faster. He was crossing the city now, and he tucked his wings in and dropped 20 meters in elevation, dipping between the upper stories of buildings. Crowley's London was a ruin, but this one was full of tall, grand buildings and ridiculously winding streets, and Crowley knew them all like the back of his hand. Crowley tilted his wings back, braking as quickly as possible, and veered down a side street, hoping to shake his pursuer. It wasn't late enough for the streets to be deserted, as they so rarely were, and pedestrians shouted and pointed as he shot over their heads, black wings blotting out the stars. Unfortunately, this surprised chaos left enough of a trail for Crawley to follow, though when Crowley glanced over his shoulder as he shot past the column memorializing the Great London Fire, he saw that he'd opened up some distance between them. Crowley shot down Cannon Street next, the shadow of a construction crane flittering over him as he fixed his eyes on the towering bulk of the St. Paul's Cathedral straight ahead. He risked another look over his shoulder as he flashed past a row of modern flats faced with dark, shimmering windows, his reflection following him like a shadow across a pond. Crawley was slowly gaining on him, so Crowley turned his attention back to St. Paul's Dome as he sped towards it. He forced himself higher as he shot over the church's gardens, gaining just enough height to clear the southern transept. The pale marble columns of the dome's drum blurred in his vision as he strained his wings, angling himself towards the column of the two belfries on the cathedral's western edge. Crawley was closer now, the words of his shouted threats whisked away by the wind, but leaving the meaning very clear. Crawley pointed himself very close to the edge of his chosen belfry, between the two arches of the lantern, and an elaborately sculpted spire. When he was only meters away, he cranked his wings in until they were nearly flush with his body, shooting through the small space like a thread through the eye of a needle. Once he cleared the edge of the belfry, he flared out the tips of his wings and dove straight down out of sight of the cathedral's roof. A heartbeat later, he heard Crawley's wing clip part of the belfry, and Crawley wasted no time in shooting across the churchyard and into the street. He rocketed down Ludgate Hill, and when he glanced over his shoulder a few seconds later, he didn't see any signs of pursuit. Crowley turned his attention back to the street and gained a bit more altitude, keeping height with the rooftops as he neared Mayfair. He found his building and dropped to the street outside, sending a nearby group of drunken teenagers scrambling backwards and falling into each other. Crowley tucked his wings away and ignored them as he sprinted past the Bentley and through the doors. He took the lift to his flat and hastily waved his way inside. He crossed directly to the cartoon of the Mona Lisa, lifted it off the wall, and propped the sword up next to it. He unlocked the safe and pulled the door open. Crowley took a deep breath, listening for sounds of commotion from outside, but all was quiet. He drew out the long PVC gloves and pulled them on. Then he picked up the tongs and began to unscrew the cap of the flask. After a long, tense minute, Crowley set the tongs back down in the safe. He pulled the freshly filled bucket out of its place and walked with it over to the door of his flat. As far as Crowley was concerned, this strategy had worked once, and there was no sense in thinking it wouldn't work again. He set the bucket on top of the ajar door and returned to the safe. Next, he drew what he thought was one of his cleverest and possibly most reckless ideas yet, a Nerf Super Soaker 2000, nearly half a meter long and fitted with a 16-ounce pressurized reservoir. It was guaranteed to shoot water up to 10 meters and was completely leak-proof. Crowley had tested this last claim extensively, wearing an all-white linen suit and filling the super soaker with colored tap water. It performed reasonably well, and Crowley had taken it up upon himself to duct tape those few areas that had proven troublesome. There was still a considerable risk involved, though, so Crowley kept the long rubber gloves on and prayed that the bucket would do the job for him. He set the super soaker gently behind the sofa, closed up the safe and replaced the Mona Lisa. Then he retrieved the sword and, after a moment of staring around his lounge, wondering where to hide it, where it wouldn't be completely irretrievable in an emergency, shoved it under the sofa cushions. Preparations now completed, Crowley hunkered down behind the sofa, where he had a good line of sight to the door, and pointed the super soaker at it. The seconds ticked by, and Crowley began to wonder, worriedly, if Crowley hadn't worked out where he'd gone. He'd been counting on Crowley, reasoning where he must be headed based on his trajectory. But it was possible he'd gotten his double more turned around in London's twisting streets than he'd thought. Crowley shifted behind the sofa, adjusting his position as his feet started to cramp. He'd just finished glancing down at his watch when there was a terrific crash from behind him and several dozen small projectiles pelted his back. He ducked automatically and twisted, swiveling the barrel of the super soaker around to face this new threat. Tiny fragments of glass cascaded off his jacket and tinkled to the floor. He was just in time to see Crowley roll smoothly to his feet and advance on him, dark wings half spread behind him. A blast of cool air hit him a fraction of a second later, and Crowley distractedly registered the broken window and fallen plant behind his double. Crowley took hasty aim with the super soaker and laid his finger on the plastic trigger. Crowley, still a stride away, reached out with his hand, clenched his fist around thin air, and dragged it sharply to the side. The super soaker flew from Crowley's hands and slammed into the wall next to his collection of soul music. Crowley's eyes tracked it fearfully as it landed on the floor, but no water spilled onto the carpet. He saw Crowley still approaching out of the corner of his eye and realized dimly that his double wasn't slowing his pace. He started to turn back around, raising a hand in defense, and caught the full force of Crowley's foot as it connected with his cheek. Crowley toppled backwards, one side of his face exploding with pain as he felt the other brush the soft, nine-twisted surface of his luxury carpet before he could catch himself. He wheezed in surprise, head ringing. He started to push himself to his feet and promptly collapsed again as Crowley slammed his foot into Crowley's ribs next. "Where is it?" Crowley demanded, pausing in his attack long enough for Crowley to spit out a mouthful of blood. It felt like one of his gums was bleeding. Crowley pushed himself slowly back into a sitting position until Crowley growled in frustration and reached down. He grabbed Crowley by the lapels and pulled him up into a sitting position, shoving him up against the back of the sofa. Crowley made a show of feeling around his jaw with his tongue. Behind Crowley and off to the side, the bucket of holy water silently lifted itself off the top of the door and started inching its way closer. "The sword, you rat! Where is the sword?" Crowley demanded, pulling Crowley slightly forward by the lapels so he could ram him back against the sofa again. Crowley held up a hand and coughed, trying to look as pathetic as possible. Behind Crowley, the bucket floated closer. Crowley growled, but released Crowley long enough for him to wipe his bloodied mouth with the back of his gloved hand. "Why do you care so much?" Crowley asked, stammering on purpose for once. The bucket was only a meter behind Crowley now, very close to the demon's perfectly groomed wings. This would require some very careful timing. "That's none of your bloody business," Crowley hissed. "Just tell me." Crowley wasn't sure what gave him away. He wasn't looking in the direction of the bucket, and he didn't think he was reflexively moving his hands to guide its path. Maybe Crowley heard the faint sloshing of the water behind him, or was suspicious that Crowley had given up so easily. In any case, Crowley spun on the spot and made a quick gesture with his hand. Crowley simultaneously tipped the bucket and threw himself out of harm's way. He rolled clumsily back to his feet and glanced over his shoulder to see the bucket, contents and all, vaporizing in what looked like a colossal fireball. Crowley hastily turned and crossed the few short meters to his soul music collection. He scooped up the super soaker from the floor and turned, gloved hands falling into place. For the second time, Crawley made a fist and yanked the water gun from Crowley's grip, one of Crowley's long PVC gloves half coming along with it. Crowley lunged after the super soaker this time, but it zipped mindlessly towards the destroyed window and tossed itself outside. A heartbeat later, there came a faint sound of a crash, and plastic splintering, and someone shouting.
"None of that," Crawley growled. "Sword, now!"
For a moment, they stared at each other, Crowley breathing quite heavily and feeling a bruise blossoming on his cheek as he distractedly stripped off his now useless gloves. Then he lunged for the television. Crawley lurched after him, but he had to run around the corner of the sofa to intercept him. Crowley reached his flat-screen television first and leapt uncoordinatedly onto its narrow cabinet, shoving himself between the telly and the wall as Crawley skidded closer. Crowley shoved the television off its cabinet, sparks shooting as the wires tore themselves free, and the telly toppled forward and slammed into Crawley just as he reached him. Crawley staggered backwards as the screen of the television shattered, sending splinters flying, and Crowley leapt off the cabinet and made for the door. Before he made it more than two steps, Crawley's hand closed around his wrist and yanked him backwards. Unwilling to get too close to the shattered remains of the television, some of which were sparking alarmingly, Crowley threw himself in the opposite direction and onto his oval-shaped, glass-topped coffee table. Crawley pursued him almost immediately, and Crowley realized the foil of his decision as Crawley yanked on his arm, and Crowley found himself slammed, face first, against the top of his coffee table, jaw searing for a second time.
"Where is it?"
Crawley growled, half climbing onto the coffee table himself as Crowley twisted and tried to wriggle away. Crowley reached out and grabbed his attacker's lapels, twisting further and dragging Crawley over him and towards the far side of the coffee table. This worked reasonably well, though Crawley grabbed onto him in turn as Crowley tried to roll his attacker off the edge of the table. Crowley was wrenched off the table as well, and for a moment they both landed, squeezed in the narrow space between the sofa and the coffee table. Crowley was on top, and he took a free breath. The cushions of the sofa were right next to his face, and he knew that all he had to do was reach under them, and he'd have a weapon. He might not be able to light the sword, but maybe he could do some damage without the divine flames. He didn't want to risk discorporating his double. The last thing he wanted was his manacled double running loose in hell, potentially interfering with his attempt to rescue Aziraphale or getting him in trouble with the Dark Council. But maybe he could at least prevent Crawley from following him while he figured out how to get rid of him permanently. All of this went through Crowley's head in a fraction of a second, and he hastily settled on the sword as his best option. He began to stand up, intent on drawing the sword out from beneath the cushions as he did so. The moment he lifted his weight off Crawley, however, his double surged upwards, knocking one of Crowley's legs out from under him. Crowley staggered but caught himself with a hand on the sofa, pushing Crawley back down with a knee as he struggled to keep the upper hand. Crowley made a second attempt to gain his feet, sliding his hand between the sofa cushions as he did so. Crawley grabbed the knee Crowley had pressed to his sternum and pushed it hard to the side as Crowley tried to reach his feet. He staggered again, and this time when Crawley scrambled upright, he shoved the nearer of Crowley's legs up against the sofa and pinned it there with his own, while he kicked fiercely at Crowley's other knee with his free foot. It was a brutally effective attack, and Crowley felt his legs collapse under himself yet again. He hit the floor hard and started hastily backing up, trying to put some space between himself and his double. Crawley followed him, and Crowley desperately kicked out at his legs, his own still twinging. A bit to his surprise, his left foot contacted hard, and Crawley took an unsteady step backwards to catch himself. The back of his heel landed on one of the smooth shards of the shattered television screen, and his foot shot out from under him. Crawley toppled backwards as Crowley hastily scrambled to his feet and lunged for the sofa. He shoved his arm under the cushions until he felt his hand close around the cool hilt of the sword. He twisted back around, drawing the sword out after him, and it wasn't until he'd drawn it up into a defensive position that he realized that Crawley hadn't moved from his place sprawled on the floor. Crowley's eyes tracked in confusion to the coffee table, where a bright red smear lined the edge of the beveled glass surface. Crowley slowly lowered the sword, breathing heavily. The side of his face burned, his left knee was still twinging unhappily, and it felt like a bruise might be forming along his ribs. Ignoring his injuries for the moment and keeping the sword at the ready, Crowley slowly circled his sofa until he was squinting down at the back of Crawley's motionless head. He crouched down a safe distance away and carefully prodded at his double with the tip of the sword. When he didn't stir, Crowley cautiously reached over and half turned him over. There was a large cut on his double's temple, and two smeared lines of blood trailed down his cheek. Crowley frowned at the stain forming on his pristine carpet. Deciding to deal with his flat's aesthetics at a more appropriate time, Crowley carefully felt his double's neck for a pulse. He found one almost straight away and decided that no serious damage had been done. Crowley let out a breath, wincing as his side flared in response. He needed to deal with Crawley permanently, but without any holy water, he didn't have a lot of options. The divine sword had already failed him. Crowley frowned down at the blade in his hand, wondering what quality in himself it found lacking. He remembered what Crawley had said about the sword having once belonged to the Aziraphel in his universe. He turned it over slowly in his hand, made up his mind. His next priority had to be rescuing Aziraphel, and he knew that the angel could both light the sword and bless holy water. Either way, they could deal with Crawley after he made sure Aziraphel was out of harm's way. So, Crowley tossed the sword onto the sofa, grabbed his double around the armpits, and started dragging him in the direction of his loo. The end of chapter 7.